Hello there. Welcome to Karen's Inquisitive Corner. I am Karen Elizabeth Patton Jack's baby girl. Today we're going to have a gentleman by the name of Duncan Brown. Duncan has actually been an alcoholic for 20 years. He has been 9.5 years sober. Now, statistics say that in the United States, there are 17 million alcoholics. And out of the 17 million, 20 to 65% of them have experienced mental illness. Hello, Duncan. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really pleased to be here. I'm looking forward to getting into the subject. It's an important one.
When did your drinking start and why?
I mean, if you really want to go back to the beginning, I think we would probably be looking at a little version of Duncan, and his teachers asked him to write a poem, and Duncan is quite excited by this. I kind of like wrote that poem and I took it up to the teacher, and the teacher looked at it and went, well, your handwriting's scruffy, your spelling's awful, and you haven't done a pretty pattern around the edge. And I sort of thought to myself, well, that's not what writing's really about, is it? I mean, it's not about actually whether you've written it neatly or whether you've spelt it right. It's about the ideas that you're trying to convey. It's about the images that you're creating. And the teacher said, see me after school. I could not find a way to succeed in school. You know, their expectations of who I was supposed to be and my expectations of who I was supposed to be just clashed. So I really became aware of it probably around 8, 9, something like that. That's when I really became aware that there didn't seem to be a place for me in society. There wasn't anywhere where I could fit in and succeed and be who I wanted to be. And as a result, I turned to the only socially acceptable drug that 9-year-olds can get their hands on, which is, of course, chocolate. I started eating in what would be loosely termed a disordered way when I was fairly young. I mean, I started drinking, on a Sunday with my parents, like many people did. They thought that if they offered me a small amount of alcohol, it would help me learn to drink sensibly. You know, it did teach me to drink. The sensible bit, I suppose, I missed out on. But yeah, struggling to find our place and struggling to fit in, and it just really exacerbated a lot of the stuff that was going on in my head anyway. And it seemed to solve so many of my problems. It seemed to give me confidence and courage. It seemed to make me funnier. That was where it really kind of took off. It was very social.
You had access to liquor, you know, in your home with your parents, so it was there. When did your parents realize that there was a problem? Were you a teen? Were you an adult?
Sometimes I think they haven't entirely accepted it yet. I don't think they acknowledged that it was a problem until I stopped. My mum would occasionally tell me that, you know, I shouldn't have that extra glass of wine after dinner. And I just think, well, that's nothing. You should see what I'm going to do when I get home. They never sort of said, oh, well, you should stop drinking, Duncan. You're drinking way too much. It's dangerous.
When you got to the point where you were, let's say, intoxicated, mentally, where were you? Did you not care about anything? Did it kind of give you that feeling where nothing really mattered? Or did it give you the opposite feeling that you could do anything?
There's this idea that, you know, people drink to kind of remove their feelings and to push them away. I didn't want to face up to certain things. I didn't want to notice them. And it seemed to be kind of effective. But the thing is, it's only effective for a certain amount of time. You know, the first couple of drinks might get rid of it. But, you know, once you got to the bottom of the bottle, you know, it all comes back, and it all comes back so much worse. It felt a little bit like it was numbing me, but no, only temporarily. You know, always towards the end of the evening, I'd be reminded in a very uncomfortable, very visceral way of the problems that I had. And yes, I mean, also, it did make me feel like I could do anything. It inflated my sense of self-belief quite a lot.
At the end of the day, when you were still intoxicated, or were you coming off of the high when reality hit you?
I mean, in reality, you end up being intoxicated from alcohol for hours. I mean, alcohol is quite a slow acting drug, so it takes a while to really kick in, and it takes a long time to clear out of your system. So if you drink enough the night before, you know, you can still technically be intoxicated till about lunchtime the next day.
Really? Explain to the audience, prior to being intoxicated and while you are intoxicated, and then that dip before you start again, mentally through those three stages, where were you?
As long as I had a solid plan, but I knew there was a way that I was going to have a drink later, you know, it didn't bother me too much. It was when things got in the way that would be quite uncomfortable and quite unpleasant. You know, if I was somewhere and I was thinking, well, it will finish up about, 9 o'clock, something like that, plenty of time to go to the shops and get something to drink. And then, you know, it's sort of overrunning and it's getting to 9:30 and it's ticking along towards 9:45, and you're thinking, blimey, the shop is closing in 15 minutes. And, you know, I'm like out of there and running to the shop. So, yeah, I mean, it took up a lot of mental energy and a lot of processing power when I wasn't drinking. Because the next day it just felt like life. You know, that's what my life felt like. It felt kind of a little bit fuzzy, a little bit hazy. I felt tired all of the time, but, you know, I just thought that was normal. I just thought that was because I was stressed. I had a very kind of short fuse. I'd get annoyed quite easily. I wouldn't really put up with people, unless they were doing exactly what I wanted them to do. If I'd gone to see a doctor, they would have gone, yes, you are suffering from what is technically known as depression. I was generally miserable for most of the time. There was not a lot of joy in my life. Tiredness, lethargy, kind of bad mood sort of thing. And then there was thinking about when I can get a drink, and then there was drinking. And that was just it. You know, just go through that cycle. Feel bad, think about drinking, drink, feel bad, think about drinking, drink. That was my life for a good 10 years.
Under the influence, were you aware of what you were doing, what you were saying, how you were acting, but you couldn't control it?
I used to think that I was, very much, in control. And I have done plenty of silly things when I was drunk and, regretted them enormously in the morning.
While you were drinking and taking that next drink and that next drink and that next drink, mentally, were you telling yourself, Duncan, you don't need this drink? Why are you doing this? But, you know, you still take that drink. And then the next drink, you're thinking, Duncan, why? And then the next morning, you're thinking, hey, you can't keep doing this, Duncan. You know, what are you going to do to fix it?
I didn't really think about it when I was doing it. I wasn't even really that aware that I was doing it. You know, just there would be a glass of wine next to me. I'd probably be doing something else as well. And so I'd just be drinking and not really thinking about it. I think towards the end, I did kind of get to a point where it was almost like I'd wake up every morning and I'd think, maybe I shouldn't drink today. And then by about 6 o'clock, you know, life would have beaten that out of me, and I'd be thinking, I'll have something to drink this evening. I've had a stressful day, I deserve it. And then I'd wake up the next day and I'd think, I'm not going to drink today. So it wasn't so much that I was kind of like, I must stop, this is terrible, this is bad. I just sort of be like, well, no, I'll have a day off, you know, I won't drink today. And, you know, that resolve would typically last till about the end of work, and then I would change my mind.
So did you ever drink prior to work, or was it always after work?
No, not really. It was always after work. You know, I mean, it was like, I have control of this, don't I? So I don't need to drink in the morning. And that is one of the biggest misconceptions I think there is around alcohol. There is a significant proportion of the people in this world who believe that you can't have a problem with drinking unless you're putting vodka on your cornflakes, you know, unless you are drinking first thing in the morning, it's not problem drinking. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely not the case. You know, mm-hmm. I was unquestionably a problem drinker, and I very rarely drank before 8:30, 9 o'clock at night.
And I could really understand how you were working all day, but you were looking at the clock thinking, I can't wait to get home so I can have this drink, so I can relax, so I can forget everything. But I'm actually thinking about it, referring to it as like depression. If I'm out working or whatever, I'm like, I cannot wait to get home so I don't have to do anything. I don't have to worry about nothing. You know, get me away from all of this. I just want to get home and sit in my chair. And I would think about that all day until I literally got home, got in my chair, or got in the bed. You know, I'm just thinking about, I cannot wait to get there. When all of this is over, I just need to get there and just go to sleep or be quiet. And, you know, everything is going to be okay. So I can definitely relate to that comment that you made. Just hurry up. Just let me get home and just let me get this drink. Duncan, when did you realize that it was definitely, definitely a problem? And what was the straw that broke the camel's back that put you on this 9.5 years of being sober?
I was working, you know, I was actually achieving a fair amount. You know, I was reasonably successful. I was doing a lot of stuff in local government. I was, you know, I was mayor of my hometown. I wasn't doing badly. I had a nice house, had a nice wife. We're like, all right, well, let's do the next logical step. Let's have a child. So we decided to start a family, which, you know, we tried quite hard at, which was fun. And then my wife got pregnant, and you know, that was all kind of like, you know, naive, smiling, stupid parent, new parent thing, until she had a miscarriage, and then all of a sudden it was just not fun at all. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, my the only way I knew to deal with stress and hard times and difficult emotions was, of course, to just pour myself into a bottle of wine, which, you know, looking back, I now realize that was a terrible thing to do, because my wife actually needed some help and some support, and I just wasn't there for her while she was going through an incredibly tough time. That kind of made things a bit difficult, shall we say. And that made me sort of think a bit about my life and what I wanted from it. I mean, I basically kind of asked myself a lot of soul-searching questions, which all boil down to this basic idea. What do you want from life, Duncan? Do you want a drink or do you want a family? So that was the thing that really kind of like made me change. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I really acknowledged that I had a problem, or at least the depth of the problem, until I had very nearly stopped drinking. So what I did was I went through a process of uncovering and examining and questioning the beliefs that I had around alcohol. And it wasn't until I was quite a long way down that process that I actually realized how much of a problem it had become, how much of my life it had taken over. And almost to the point that actually, you know, once I stopped, that was, and I started to get some of these great benefits of not drinking, that I actually started to really see it and feel it and, you know, realize that the reason why you're tired all the time, Duncan, is not because you're stressed or because you're getting a little bit older. It's all of that alcohol. The reason why you're rubbish until 12 o'clock and 17 cups of coffee, you know, it's not because you're not a morning person. It's all the alcohol. So it was kind of only really after the fact that, you know, it started to sink in, you know, what a huge problem it was.
How did you handle it? Did you go to counseling? Did you do this cold turkey or what?
So I stopped smoking a couple of years before I stopped drinking. And I used a book called Alan Carr's Easy Way to Stop Smoking. And frankly, well, it was easy. That's generally why they call it the easy way. So when I sort of figured out that it was a good idea to stop, I thought, I'll just do what I did when I stopped smoking. And well, so it's not exactly cold turkey as such. I didn't stop drinking straight away. I continued to drink, but I covered the Alan Carr, the Easy Way stuff again. I looked at it again, and that got me on this process of thinking about alcohol and, you know, what is it I believed about alcohol? You know, were my beliefs true? Were my beliefs helping me? Were they, you know, serving me? Were they helping me become the kind of person I wanted to become? And in that kind of point of questioning, I got to the point where I no longer really wanted to drink. In fact, I can stick my hand on my heart and say I have absolutely no desire to drink. I have not missed it once in the last 9.5 years. I got to that point, I just stopped drinking. What I would describe as spontaneous sobriety or natural recovery is when you stop drinking really without any help at all. It was fairly close to that. It definitely wasn't medically assisted withdrawals or anything like that. So if you want to call it cold turkey, you can.
Have you been in counseling?
So not formally, no. I happen to have a few very good friends who have helped me navigate through some of the more difficult aspects of my previous life. Most of the therapy I have done has resulted in books. You know, that is the way I express myself. I have always been a writer, and I've always found that an amazing way to express what's going on in my head and get it out and put it on paper. The books that I've written about drinking and my life and that kind of thing, I found enormously cathartic. I've done a lot of physical stuff, which I would argue is therapeutic as well. So I've done a lot of breathing and yoga and getting back in touch with my body and things like that. So I haven't done any formal therapy, but I'm lucky that I've got some good people to talk to. I massively, you know, writing is something that I find deeply therapeutic. And I think the physical work that goes alongside that has been helpful as well.
I would think that you would be a minority compared to the number of people that go to counseling and that admit themselves to sinners.
You would think that most people do, but unfortunately you're wrong.
Okay. I mean,
the most common way to stop drinking, by far, about 45% of people that stop drinking do it without any formal support at all. Natural recovery. That is the way most people stop drinking. 12-step group programs, AA, Life Ring, Radical Recovery, all of those kind of things, you know, that makes up a lot of it. There are people who stop purely through, you know, a therapeutic relationship. But more and more people these days stop using sober coaches, which takes a slightly different approach. They generally tend to revolve around something called cognitive reframing or cognitive realignment, which is sort of what Alan Carr's Easy Way method. That's the method that I used as well. Oh, that's what I would say if you asked me.
Duncan, what would you tell your younger self today?
One of the things that I feel a little bit robbed about is that nobody told me that in the United Kingdom, 30.2% of men that drink alcohol develop a problem with it. So when I started drinking alcohol, nobody told me I had basically a 1 in 3 chance of developing a problem. At least I would have known the risk I was taking. I never knew that. And I think that's the sad thing, that a lot of people don't realize just how many people it affects. And therefore they start, they drink alcohol and they think of it the same way as they think of, you know, Sprite or Fanta or milk or, you know, water. That is something I feel a little bit robbed about. I mean, I would like to go back to my younger self and give myself a hug and tell myself that I'm worthy of love and that I'm enough and, you know, that I don't need the alcohol. In fact, that, you know, it won't help me be more creative. It will stunt my potential massively. You know, I'd love to have a good talk with myself, but I think a good hug would have probably been much more effective.
A hug goes a long way. Are you still married?
I am still married, yes. My wife is either very tolerant or very stupid.
Well, Duncan, you definitely have an amazing story of survival. As we close, I want you to leave with the audience what you know that you know at this chapter in your life.
You know, it goes right back to what I would have said to my younger self. You know, I needed a hug and I needed the love because I didn't have it inside myself, or at least I didn't think I had it inside myself. Mm-hmm. Now I know that I do. You know, now mm-hmm. I know that my spirit, soul, call it what you like, you know, it bursts with love. And, you know, there is so much that I can give, and that actually through giving, you know, is the way to really make yourself happy. And yeah, I just, you know, I've come to a point in my life where I've accepted that, you know, I am all right. I am okay. I am enough. I don't need to validate myself externally. I don't need to pour something down my throat. I just am happy being me. And if you can get to that point, there's not a lot other people can do to upset you, because it all comes from the inside. What happens externally, yeah, it's annoying, but it can't really rock the boat that much, can it?
I'm going to close with this. Go give somebody a huge hug today and tell them how amazing they are, and tell them that they are worth it and they are enough. Mwah. Love you, and I'll see you next Saturday. Duncan, thank you so much.
That's my absolute pleasure. Share the love, everybody.